Okay. So we left off last week in the middle of the discussion of Eil Ve'el Ujibel Kunchayim with the popular Pshan among the Maharal, based on Rashi Subos, and many of the Achronim, explained that reality is very complex and that more than, you know, contradictory opinions can be true, not because there are different options for the truth, but because the whole truth is very complex and is made of multiple facets. And what looks like a contradiction is really not a contradiction, but just two aspects of what's going on. Okay, I got a short tangent. This is very famous, everyone who knows a little bit about secular philosophy knows that Hegel had a famous historical approach where the way history works, you have thesis, antithesis, and synthesis, and most people don't understand philosophically what he was saying. They think it means someone holds one thing, someone else holds exactly, if I care, the opposite, and then they make a pshara between them. That's not what he meant. That's not what Hegel calls synthesis. What he means is that there's one idea, and then as a reaction to that idea comes a completely opposite idea, antithesis, and then you rise to a higher, history rises to a higher level of understanding where you see there was never really a contradiction in the first place, and there wasn't really a stira, it was just two aspects of an issue, and, you know, the truth really combines them both. Not like you make a pshara between them, practically. And that is exactly what the Halakha Maharal understands, the nature of pluralism within halacha. And then I said we're going to end with Rav Kook. And we need, it's worth spending half an hour to understand a little of where Rav Kook was coming from philosophically. There's a lot to say about Rav Kook. Obviously, I don't, you know, I'm not foolish enough to claim that I can totally explain Rav Kook to you in half an hour. As a matter of fact, I'm not even foolish enough to claim that I could totally explain Rav Kook to you no matter how much time I had, because it's very complex and I'm not an expert in Rav Kook. But just to understand on a very basic level where Rav Kook is coming from, everyone knows that historically Rav Kook was so significant in that in religious Zionism, in that he, you know, as opposed to the Yishuv HaYashanniks of his time, he connected to the secularists and even to the anti-religious Zionists, and he made a model for cooperation between the religious Zionists and the non-religious, and for the Kedusha of, you know, of the State of Israel, serving the army, and et cetera, et cetera. He never saw the State of Israel, but the basic ideas are there. And that's all true. The question is, where did that come from philosophically? And what made Rav Kook different, and I think what made Rav Kook more successful in terms of his hashpa'ah on religious Zionism for the next, you know, 80 years, more so than other people who everyone's forgotten about, like Rav Reines, etc., or, you know, or Rav Uziel and other famous people who all ended up, like, accomplishing similar things in terms of their practical conclusions, was the philosophy behind where Rav Kook was coming from. Because you could have said, I have a philosophy that, you know, it's kedai to cooperate with the secularists because it's so important to have a state of Israel, and that the state of Israel can be geula even though there are secularists there because, you know, we can ignore the presence of the secularists and pretend that it's only the religious people, etc. And that's not where Rav Kook is coming from. Where Rav Kook is coming from is, if you take this idea that when there are two opposites, when there are two ideas that contradict each other, machlokotim, two mutually exclusive ideas, that's only why are ideas mutually exclusive. Because if you look at them in a simplistic way, it looks like a machlokis, and it looks like only one guy can be right and one can be wrong. But when you look at things more deeply from a higher place, Rav Kook would call it a higher place, you see that they're just different aspects of the issue and they're both right. And if you put them both together, you have the whole truth. Now, that is Eil Ve'el Ujibel Kunchayim, according to many of the Mefarshim we saw. The Chiddush of Rav Kook is that until now, the last 2 weeks, we've been discussing pluralism within the realm of valid Torah opinions. And, you know, every Ben Torah knows, well, not necessarily just because they went to elementary school, but anyone to yeshiva knows that the derech of Ben Torah and the Jewish Mesorah is that within the bounds of valid Mesorah, you know, let's call it Orthodox Judaism, right, is the modern day term for that. Within Orthodox Judaism, you know, even if people argue, all the opinions are valid. And then we discussed why. But generally people would say that's within Orthodox Judaism. What about atheism? What about Reformed Judaism? What about, you know, Buddhism? What about v'chuli v'chuli? No, that's just pashut wrong. Yet pluralism within a certain boundary, but outside that boundary, there's something called pashut sheker, right? That's shivim panim l'torah. Rabbi Lamb always liked to say, right? He was not a Talmud Rav Kook. Rabbi Lamb always liked to say, probably still does like to say, there are shivim panim l'torah, but not 71 or 72, right? That doesn't mean everything's valid. And that's the normal way most people have looked at things through the doros. Rav Kook's chiddush is that he took this idea that really everyone's right, and really the truth is complex and made of all the opinions, and really they're not arguing, they're just telling you different sides of the issue, and apply that to kfirah as well. Now, don't misquote me here. He didn't say elu ve'elu dibur lekim chayim about atheism and kfirah. He wouldn't have used that word, because that, you can't mamish say dibur lekim chayim. But he took the idea that each side is teaching you a little of the truth, and if you put together both sides, you get the whole truth, and really the truth includes both of them, because it's very complex. And his chiddush was, he applied it to things outside the bounds of Orthodox Judaism as well. Specifically, I mean, you can find places where he talks about Spinoza and how it applies to Buddhism and how it applies to this and that, but specifically, obviously, we're talking about secular Zionism, which you have to remember, in his day, secular Zionism was, secularism was real secularism. It's not like nowadays. Nowadays, you look around Israel, and they're the religious people who believe in religion, and the secular people who believe that no one should really believe in anything, and everyone should be left alone. That's the 21st postmodern era. In Rav Kook's days, no. The religious people believe religion has all the answers, and it's the emes, and the opposite of sheker. Religious people still believe that. And the secular people said, no, we have the philosophy that has all the answers, and is bringing Mashiach, and is bringing Geula, and explains everything about the world. It's called communism, or socialism, or nationalism, or etc. And that's the MS, and the religion is a dangerous sheker, which is keeping us from redeeming the world with our truth that has all the answers to all the problems of humanity. You know, they were serious about their beliefs in those days. And the atheism then was like, you know, they took it very seriously. It's not like now, they know who's an atheist nowadays. The secular is just, you know, you want everyone to have the right to do what they want, to be left alone, and not have to have philosophies. But in those days, it was different. And Rav Kook says, Rav Kook's chiddush is that, and this is what made him able, how he was mitchaber. He wasn't mitchaber to the secularists in a sort of tepid way of, well, even though you're secularist, we can at least, like the Rav would say, right? Even though you're secularist, we can ignore your secularism and cooperate on social and practical issues. That's what the Rav would say in confrontation. You have the opposite philosophy of me? But the Rav was open-minded and willing to have a broad perspective. He says, let's forget our philosophical differences and just leave that as, you know, we'll fight about that another time and cooperate on practical issues. The Rav would say, we can cooperate with secular Zionism on defense and on the economy because that's something we have in common and put the differences aside for a bit. That's not Rav Kook. That's not Rav Kook. That was all the religious Zionists who held you could cooperate with secularists until Rav Kook. Rav Kook was like, no, we can love your kfirah and your secularism because it's so holy. Not like ignore it and cooperate on politics and economy. No, we can see the kedusha in your atheism and the kedusha in your secularism. And let's just read a few pieces here. Let's start with the more theoretical pieces, 17, 18, 19, and then get to some of the practical pieces where he says things that might surprise you. But I will explain why it shouldn't. 17. Kol hamachshavos hegyonos yoshein. All philosophies are logical. Uvekesher sistemi hinikshoros. And there's a systematized way of connecting them all into one unity. And he doesn't mean all like chasidim and misnagdim and, you know, modern orthodox and ultra orthodox and Sephardim and Ashkenazim, etc. He means all philosophies. And again, he doesn't just mean secular Zionism. We'll see later on. I mean, he didn't live to see this. But, you know, he, at the risk of being misquoted on why you Torah, but philosophers take things out of soap. That's what makes them philosopher. He would have said, yeah, Hitler also, Nazism, Mein Kampf, he also is right and there's truth there because all philosophies are true. I mean, he says it about Haman later on, right? So the Chor who went in, right? Gam olson she'enu makir ba'em kiyam bitzvot rayon livad, even if we only see the bubbling of a little idea, If we go to the root of any philosophy, and again, the one that was most lightsome for him was secular Zionism, you'll see how it comes out of the source of all logic, meaning Hashem. That's how machshava works. There is no machshava b'teila. There is no false philosophy, empty philosophy. Everything has its place. Meaning, secular Zionism has something to accomplish. Kfira atheism has something to accomplish. Buddhism and whatever it is, everything has its place and has a function in the world. Because it all comes from Chacha. What about false and empty philosophies? No, Zed Dofir Kani Shvarak is Signon and Achitzon. Right, after all. Right, he wasn't, he was from. Yes, he went secular Zionism. Oh, it's a bunch of falsehood and vanity and emptiness. He says, yeah. That's in the signum chitzon, the chitzonius of secular Zionism is secular and is anti-religious and is evil and etc. etc. Abok shiyordim apnimiusum, but the pnimius of the evil philosophies, motzon vein yisodei chayim, is the yisodos of life. Ki chachma makor chayim, all chachma comes to Hashem, makor chayim. This is, of course, let me just introduce what Rav Kook is all about. Anyone know what big word Rav Kook like to use all the time? There are actually two. He likes to use or a lot. But, anyone know, religious Zionism nowadays, if you send your kid to a religious Zionist school, high school, and they have Jewish philosophy class, do they call it Jewish philosophy? Emuna. They call it Emuna. Emuna is a very big word for Rav Kook, and you have to know what Emuna means for Rav Kook. I didn't bring a course about this, because I didn't want to be marking too much, but you have to understand what Rav Kook meant by Emuna, what everyone else meant by Emuna. What everyone else meant by Emuna is, you have to know that X is true and Y is false. L'havdil min kodesh l'chol. Yeah, Rav Kook also admitted there's something called the Hapdil in the Chitzonius level. But Emuna means something, we have to know which statements are the true, and the opposite of those are false. That's what we all think Emuna means, right? God exists as true, and God doesn't exist as false. L'chulei, the Torah is true, is, you know, the Torah comes from Hashem is true, and the Torah is made up by people is false. And you could go weiter. For Rav Kook, that's not what Emuna means. For Rav Kook, that's not Emuna. That's kindergarten. That's, you know, that's Judaism for dummies. That's not Emuna. For Rav Kook, Emuna doesn't mean I become very, 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 very sure of a few statements being true. No, that's childish. For Rav Kook, Emuna means Emuna doesn't mean like I see the Kodesh. For Rav Kook, Emuna means everything is Kodesh. Emuna means I see how everything in the world is from Hashem and everything is Kodesh and everything is good. And what Rav Kook means by Emuna, and this is what struck people so much that they were so taken by this, is real emunah for Rav Kook is a very high madriga, is to see that everything is kadosh and everything is from Hashem. Even things that seem the most not that way. That is, now, that's a very easy thing to pretend you're doing and say. It's a very hard madriga to actually reach. And he took it very, very far, meaning when he would walk by, you know, and see like a little leaf hanging off a tree, he would mamish like, Mamish Shida Mimis Paul from the Kedusha, that little leaf off the tree, even though no different from the other 6 trillion leaves on the other 6 trillion trees to me. But so Rav Kook, Emuna means everything is holy and everything's from Hashem. And of course, like, how is he mitchaber to the secularist? It's very easy. If you don't really like care about Hashem, you can be mitchaber to everyone. If you care about Hashem and you want the emes, not the sheker, you can't be mitchaber to the secularist. So Rav Kook says, no, but if you reach a madriga higher than that, you believe in Hashem so much that everything is Hashem, then all of a sudden you can be mechaber to the secularists because they're also kadosh. So if you reach such a high madrega that everything is kadosh, then, again, he admits, in the chitzonius we're mabdim in kodosh l'chol, but if you reach the madrega of seeing that the pnimius, there is no hevdel in kodosh l'chol and everything is kadosh, and you see, by the way, Rav Kook never quotes traditional Kabbalistic language in the lushan of the stam, of the regular mekubalim. But everything he says has its roots in Kabbalah. He just says it over in a totally different signon, totally different language. You know, we all know that Alpi Kabbalah, even the Sitra Achor, really comes from the same source, etc., etc., and has a function. And that's what Rav Kook means by Emunah. So what does he say? Even the most anti-Torah, even the worst philosophies in the world, Bechitzonius is Ma'abdim in Kodesh L'chol, but Bechimius, they're all holy. V'chol adam b'lei neim otzos machshavosot hamon kain elyonim. Everyone's machshavos are filled with eternal, supernal life. Shasim liyos mizdakim v'om d'chayim v'yavim. And what will happen in the end? In the end, everything will be purified and its pnimius truth and holiness will come out and you'll see what looked like a philosophy of sheker was really a philosophy of emeth v'pnimius when it comes out, and it will come out. He has faith that it will come out. It won't be thrown in the garbage. When we perfect the world, what the highest madrega for a Tamachacham, the higher madrega you are, the more you connect to the pnimius of everything, which means you see all the evil is really good. You take from every philosophy or thought, whether yours or others, as garina nitzchi, the eternal true core within it, which is good and logical and comes from Hashem. And you use that to be ma'ala yourself. A true tzaddik learns the atheist philosophy, finds the kedusha within it, and is now on a higher madrega because he learned atheism, because he learned from the atheist. Hizel chacham alone be kol adam below shir cloud. Kol adam doesn't mean every Orthodox Jew, or every Orthodox rabbi, or every, you know, whatever. Kol adam means below shir cloud, right? Without exception. Everyone has something to teach you, because every philosophy has a little aspect of truth that you might not have yet. And therefore, you need to learn from it. Yes?
But if all the philosophies that be so really kodesh, so how does he understand the fact that people will be nanash for having these
philosophies? So he writes that later. In one, I think it's in some place I put here on the sheet. Some place here he writes that, in Bez and Shalmata, we have to judge things on the level of Chitzonius, and, you know, if someone's a Mesis, we kill them, right?
Bez and Shalmata will be on the Shem, they're covered
with Chias and Mesis. No. Maybe Bez and Shalmata will also be on the Shem, that's not our problem. But B'Yesod HaDavar, meaning in terms of what people deserve a Schar and Onesh, so you look at the Chitzonius and the practical effect, and they might deserve an Onesh, whether here or there, or up there. But in terms of the Yesod HaDavar, it's really good.
But that's eventually a steer, especially if they're getting...
No, it's not.
...an ownership there. How can it be nanash in something that's good?
What? Because the pnimius was good, but the chitzonius was bad. So you can be nanash for the chitzonius. No? Guy can have a very, very good heart, and the chitzonius do something totally wrong and be nanash.
Is this the same as pantheism?
No, they like to call it panentheism, because pantheism means everything is God, and that's it. God is just everything in the world and nothing more. Rav Kook believed, no. God is everything in the world, but also beyond everything in the world. He like had his cake and ate it too. And again, it's hard to analyze these things. They're very abstract. But he was almost pantheistic. He loved Spinoza. Again, he also would have put Spinoza in the Chayyim and the Misam's amount of bias, no doubt, in the Chitzonius. But the Pnimius, he saw the Kedusha of Spinoza, who is the most famous first, perhaps even pantheist. And pantheism means the philosophy that God is just like the whole world. So he says he's almost a pantheist. God is the whole world. But he's also more than the whole world. Meaning, God is more than the whole world. But he's also everything, in Mamali, everything in the world, Belishi or Cloud. And they invented a phrase for this, not just for Kook, for other people held this, called panentheism, to show that it's not pantheism. You know, but that's exactly, he says, Spinoza was a pantheist. He says, there's no God. God is just a word for everything in the world. The Kedusha Spinoza, and the Chitzonis, he denied God. But really, he's teaching us the Kedusha of God. Because until now, people felt like God was here and not there. Now we can have a higher level of ruchnius, because we learned from Spinoza that God is everywhere. We took the pnimius of him, although not the Chitzonius, that he denied God being beyond the world.
Is there no such thing which pnimius this chapter?
Correct. No such thing. Impossible. Why? Because Hashem created everything. Meaning, again, if you look in the Kabbalah, you find, again, you don't find them applied to secular Zionists, but you find all these Yesodos. There's almost nothing that Rav Kook says that you can't find the Yesodos in the Mekubalim. Just they speak in a language of Kabbalah, and he speaks in a language of his particular Signon Nivu'i, which he chose to write in.
So why do you think, why would he choose to write it that way? Why would he try to?
Because he was trying to talk to the Ruach Hador. He was into the idea of Ruach Hador, right? Zeitgeist, that's also a Galen term. Okay, but let's read a few things. Let's skip to 18. Avoda Gedola Umeirahi, Lahasar Zakasna Lik Lagamre. It's a big enlightening gedola to take chas out of your heart legamri. What does he mean by that? He doesn't mean don't get mad. L'hadol kol ve'in yofet, to see everything optimistically. B'chem l'shal chesed, she'ein l'gvol, l'idamos el yona ein ilah ein edekula chivra. Gam al mash osim rishayim, to see optimistically even what rishayim do. Gam al roim hayosim rishayim rishayim, even the worst rishayim. L'achmol yosim nishkan v'butzah rishayim. To be choma that they're stuck in this mud of rishas. Okay, so far, any nice person could do that. And to see what's really good about them, and to be marve the sin bezchos even in the mesisin medichin, right? Even the people who are trying to get from people and convince them to be secular, right? Even though the Torah said losachma v'losachase, zel rak, that's already referred to. Beisha mishpan olu lemaisa. Lemaisa in bezdin, losachma v'losachase on a mesis. But philosophically, then Yishlodin Harbi Limtos Kavana Toba to find the good Kavanos. Now again, he doesn't mean here. Again, you could just be a nice person and have read some Rav Nachman and said, you know, oh, this guy's a Mesami Diyah, but look how like kind he is to little children, so I could see a nice thing. No. You have to find the nice thing in the Mesami Diyah Shavo. Right? Sheyecholius Gnuza Gamba Sosavadacha. In the Mesis of Media is some Kedusha and some Tzad Tov. Not like coincidentally, like in a different part of life, he's nice to his kids. He says, how do you fight Mesis of Media? This is his tactic. You don't fight Mesis of Media by showing how terrible they are. You fight Mesis of Media, and this is how he fought secular Zionism. Everyone thinks he didn't fight secular Zionism. He did fight secularism, but in his way of fighting secularism, you have to find the koach of emes and kedusha within this particular kfira that you're encountering. And once you find and show the koach that really there's an emuna in the pnim of that kfira, you've been mevatel the poisonous danger of that kfira. Now all of a sudden you've defeated it. You don't defeat it by fighting against it, right? The famous Rav Kook, Tzaddik and Gemura, don't complain about rishos, but add tzidkos. But it's not just Tzaddik and Gemura don't complain about rishos, but add tzidkos in their own houses. Tzaddik and Gemura don't complain about the negative of the rishos. They find the emuna in the kfira, and then all of a sudden, once you've shown that the kfira is really emuna, it's not so dangerous anymore. The koach ha-maharish of a holich mismai, then not all of a sudden bin rega. But it's holich mismai. Once you do that, it starts, the danger of it, the destructiveness goes down and down. Shesofan sholoshom ke'elim gam liyosmim me tapkinim. That these are sharmem et konim. And that's what he says. What does it mean? Be'bonav shol sisra. Lum du Torah b'Yerushalayim, the Ibn Shal Hamal Lum du Torah b'Nei Brak. Right, I'll summarize the next paragraph. It doesn't mean me Ibn Shkoch HaTshuva, the Ibn of Haman and Sisra could still abandon their Masorah of Haman and Sisra and learn Torah. He says, no, that's no Chiddush. Everyone knows you're Bechir Chafshis. Right? The Chiddush is that they took the Koach of Haman and added a Chelik of Torah based on the Chidushim of Haman, and added a Chelik of Torah based on the philosophy of Sisra. And they were Magdal Torah Madir by adding the Nekudas HaEmes, which lie behind the Nazism of Haman, to the Torah. Again, do I know how to do that? No. And I don't even know if Rav Kook would have known how to do that to Haman. But it's there. Val Yishri Leib, next paragraph, Gibor Koach, what's the job of the Dolik Hador, Yisraelit Gor Koach, Oskim Avodot HaKodesh, the Emes of Matamim, Lezakeh Kol HaMachshavos, the job of Gedolei Hador is to purify all the Machshavos, even the Kfir, Apolos B'chaim Tziyusam, Yashvarim Shalahem, take out the sediment, the dross, Ulamina Tochi Yotzah Havar, the job of Gedolei Hador is to find all the philosophies in your door and figure out how to identify the Kedusha within them, the Emes within them, and take out the Sheker, and all of a sudden that starts taking away the danger. Then a new or gadol that you wouldn't have had if you stayed in yeshiva in Bnei Brak. A new, when you go out to Yafo and encounter secularism and find the kedusha within it, you get a new or gadol that you never had sitting in yeshiva in the base medrash of Bnei Brak. Shemechadish koach shochaim, you're mechadish koach in the whole life. Ha'ola al gabi yeshivas or gilim ba'olam, which is higher than the words we usually use to discuss these things. Umatam otzkom ha'atzvim shem yosu v'ren, etc. Okay, you get the basic idea, just the last paragraph. The nimsa. What does it mean to hate the kofar and to hate rishas? Shasinava bozi lo bala shiyesh be'emes be'tnu v'tarvus ezer t'shetia. What does it mean that we hate them? We're mevaza the secularism, secular Zionism, a tnu and a tarvus, a culture or a movement. We don't really hate the secularism shavot. We don't really hate the evil and the kfir and the rishas shavot. Because really, that's only chitzonius. Really, it's just in the pnimius, it's amuna. What do we really hate? Yeah, I hate the kofar. I hate the kfira. What do I hate about secular Zionism? I hate the fact that its pnimius hasn't been misgalo, the true or of its pnimius. Meaning, I hate the fact that it hasn't progressed along the way it was supposed to progress. I hate the fact that it's not advancing fast enough. I hate the fact that it hasn't fully completed the understanding and explanation of its own philosophy. What I hate about secular Zionism is not their secular, their kofrin. Not in fear of Olam. What I hate is that they haven't been mevarer their emun enough. I hate the fact that they're so slow in being mevarer their true nekudas emes in them. Okay, you get the basic point. Just 19, for example, he has a letter to someone where someone wrote, like, what do you, yeah? Book?
Wasn't he worried that people would take this philosophy and fall off a cliff? Because if you embrace the Ra, there's no kfir b'olam. So essentially, the over-arbera are just going to multiply and the kfir will spread.
Correct. He keeps talking, you should notice, about how the gedolei koach and the gedolei have to be mevarer this thing. What happens if every 16-year-old tries to go and be mevarer everything? Then we know what the Gemara says, the difference between our mayor and other people, klapei acher. So apparently he wasn't afraid. And you know, this is already for... not for history, it's also, you know, it's also philosophy, but not for now. It's an interesting question. Notice that Rav Kook led a very machmir lifestyle. It could be that, you know, he didn't lead a lifestyle like the religious Zionists. It could be that if you have such a philosophy which has potential to be misused, maybe you need extra gedurim to remind you of who you are and, you know, and what path you're on in order not to misuse it, which is the interesting question, meaning, can you be less Haredi than Rav Kook and still hold the philosophy of Rav Kook without falling off the cliff? Or no, he needed like a strimal. I mean, not him, he didn't need anything, but I'm saying, you know, he needed his family and his Talmidim, although they didn't in the end, to wear a strimal, because if you don't wear a strimal and you have this philosophy, you could fall off the cliff. If you wear a kippah through God and you have a salvation philosophy, you won't fall off the cliff. But that's an interesting question, which I'm not going to answer now. Let's look at 19. Ka'es murach lefanei v'tavar akron. He says, I got your letter. Ve'es pali. He has a pell on this guy that he knew the most basic rule of logic. Shalmashe kasaf v'inin afta zafach. When I wrote about how opposites are really unified and are really the same. Ve'eshe kvodol ha'men. Dover yedua she'en afshash se'afach v'she'yubinose echa. You asked me from basic logical premises that two opposites can't both be true. You think that's a kasha in me? You think, like, I'm not higher than that? Says, it's mihani. What? I need you to tell me rules of logic that two opposites can't be true, right? It's one of the basic rules of logic. A and not A can't both be true. That kindergarten, I need you to tell me. Kindergarten emuna, I need you to write letters to me about. Hello, ikra tzadcha chiddush varhu. That's my whole chiddush, right? That's not a kasha in my theory. That is my theory. Masha mitzanach shavel yona. I know, on the Madriga we're stuck now sometimes. Remember the blind men with the elephant? It looks like they're asteris. But once you look at it from the Madrega El Yoda, Hasokeres is on Koshalavarm, you see the Pneumius, Amitsius Klaafach, there are no opposites. There are no contradictions. Everything is the same. Everything is Kaddish. Now he reminds us of the Rashi, Ksubas and Zayin. Whenever it looks like they're opposite, there's obviously some condition as to one is true in some cases, the other in other cases. Once you explain how they're both different aspects and they're both true in some cases, you'll see it look like they're asteras, but they're just two aspects of the real din. And only when you put the two opposites together do we really see the true din. They're not really opposites. Because they're not talking about exactly the same case. In different cases, they're each right. Not about mishpat. But philosophies. The din is all spiritual philosophies. The nigra miti lo nimsa. There is no real contradiction. The only things where you could actually have a sphere is like historical questions. Did the Jews leave Egypt? Did they not leave Egypt? That's more historical, so you can have a contradiction. But in philosophy, you can't have a contradiction. They're all true. What do we do with historical contradictions? What about people who say we didn't leave Egypt 3,300 years ago? Right, that's Taka Stira. Says, you know what? And even when they have contradictions about history, which, like, it's hard to say they're both right, you know what? If we just work out the philosophy and all of these spiritual deos give more light, then all the philosophies become purified and close to your heart. And then you get the Madriga of Tmimus and believe the historical Uvdos also. You know what? Don't worry about fighting as to whether, like, we got the Torah 3,300 years ago or not. Historical question. Work on the tzad of the real philosophical emunos, And as those give more light, everyone will reach Madrega, Vemuna Tmima, in the historical things mentioned in the Torah. Achar Chava, Yosef built a Mugbel, Shachofas, and Machshava, Vidavka al Yada. How will reach the Tmimas that everyone will believe what happened 3,300 years ago, even though you can't prove anything that happened so long ago, you can't do an experiment to prove it, you can't use logic to prove it, either it happened or it didn't. We believe the Tmimas. How do you get to the Tmimas? After you have unlimited freedom of inquiry and argue about all the opinions, and dafka through that, only through being ma'ayin in the kfira and finding how it's all really emuna, can we actually reach emuna tmima. As long as you stick with emuna and ignore kfira, you'll never reach the highest levels of emuna. That's Rav Kook's philosophy. And just see how he applies it in two places. 20. Kishem shi efter liyayin vol shmarim kachi efter ol blor shayim. Right, you can't have wine without sediment. I know nowadays they manage to sell it, but I guess that's what some new technology is. You know, you can't have wine without sediment, you can't have a world without Rishayim. Okay, so far I think we would all agree. K'shem shashmar ma'mid is hayim shamar. So, just like the sediment preserves the wine, right, and improves it, kach harotz nagash al Rishayim. Likewise, the gross, the will, the desires of the Rishayim, goren kiyim v'amdel shivzachayim kula. Gives a kiyum and something for the whole flow of life to stand on. Shekol beinonim tzaddikim. Meaning, the Rishayim are necessary. Without them, the beinonim tzaddikim couldn't exist. We need their input. If we get rid of all the rishas, if the shmarim would disappear and you would have yayin without shmarim, it'll get ruined, it'll turn to vinegar. You know, without the Rishayim, we would never be able to be maminim. Hagolos, the last Kochayim Shalom Mosh Marinus Mat. Now, what was one of the big fights? Anyone remember Hamasmid? Right? What was the time of all the Zionists? No one remembers the poem Hamasmid?
Cloistered.
Right? Yeah, they were cloistered and they didn't have physical strength, right? So he says, absolutely, they're so right. He says, the Golos took away our Koch of our life and took away our Shmarin. Anshi Sakonel Kiyim Achayim Shalom Mechosit Fizchayim Uve. We lost the like gross, like lower aspect of life, and we could almost have been cut off because we became such masvidim and intellectuals and lost our connection to the land and to physical labor and to building up the guf. You know what they always say? Ah, you guys, you have to build up the guf. That's what the secular said. He says, they're so right. We almost lost them. We would have died without them reminding us of Gashmius. Right? Without the Gashmius, we would have died. Thank God the Rishon were here to remind us of the importance of our Gashmius. Hachuza be-behemius of Adam Shkias HaChomrius. That we need to be behemius, animalistic, and in the ground, and Shkias, and sinking in Chomrius. Hakim begolu kiyum rasuk. In the Golos, we were torn apart. Zeyakim hamadoldol. You get the basic point. I want to have time for 21. Actually, I'm not going to have time for 21. I'll summarize. You'll go home and read it over lunch. But he says, like, Baruch Hashem, that the Rishonim are here to keep us going and remind us of Gashmius against Ruchnius. I would have said, Ruchnius, Gashmius, you know. He says, no, they remind us of Gashmius. He says, the only true Ruchnius is one that flows through the Gashmius as well. The truest Ruchnius, the Torah, makes your muscles strong also, because it makes everything have koach. And Baruch Hashem, for the Rishonim, who thought they were saying, ignore God and make your muscles strong. But they were really, saying, don't you know that the truest emunah in Hashem is that Hashem flows through the physical as well? Baruch Hashem, that the Rishon remind us. And then he has a famous 21 letter after he went on his famous tour of the Moshavot. He came back and wrote a letter. He says, we like to split ourselves into Haredim and Chofshim. Nowadays they're called Chilonim. He says, Chas Rishon, there's no Haredim and Chofshim. He says, we're all part of Klal Yisrael. And then he says, we all need to learn from each other. He says, we have to be Meser Shmos Habal and Mipinu. Get rid of these words and... what does he say? Last paragraph. It's time for us to decide. There's a hidden power of religious progress in all the camps. And for sure in the Zionists who care about Am Yisrael, whichever way they do. Let's all call ourselves Jews. Not miflagot and machanot, not charedim and chilonim and this and that. Each camp has what to improve. Each camp has to receive or and tov from the other. Okay, shkayach, the chilonim need to receive or and tov from the religious people is not a big fish. The religious people need to receive, not chilonim, they need to receive emuna from the chilonim, the also feeling her orel yona, and only then can we get the orel yona haklolus sheva nosha chuas olamin. This guy in banot chilonim kadesh kodesh kadoshim, which is the yesu kolam guda achas. What is the guda achas for him? Means you learn the lesson of emuna from the chilonim. Just for example, what he would say: what if you have a kofer? A guy says, "I don't believe in God." What does he mean by that? You know what he means by that? If he really understood God, could he not believe in God? How you talking? Everything's for Hashem. How can anyone not believe in God? What it really means is the religious people have an unsophisticated belief in God. The religious people are missing part of their belief in God. And so when I hear their incomplete belief in God, it doesn't make sense to me. And I said, if he's missing something, it can't be true. So he thinks that he told me he's being an atheist. What he's really saying is, I'm so upset that your emuna is 99% perfect, but you're missing the last 1%. I'm crying to you, listen to my 1% and use that to increase your Havana of God. And then you'll be 100% Muslim in your Havana of God. When a guy says, I don't believe in the Torah, I think the Torah is made up, it's totally false. What does he mean? Pastor, how can someone not believe in the Torah? It's lo yitachin that someone doesn't believe in Torah. What he means is that he met some yeshivalites and their understanding of Torah was so limited and didn't take into account the full beauty of Torah, and the aura was not shining broadly enough, that he said, look at all these things you're not shining or on. Look at all these things you're not shining light on. These are all important. It must be that the Torah is a fake. So, Bichitzonius, he's saying the Torah is a fake. What's he really saying? He's really saying, look, you have to improve your emunah in the Torah. You only have emunah that Torah applies to this. And I'm saying, what about the beauty out there? What I'm telling you is, why don't you just ratchet up your emunah and realize Torah is so beautiful and deep and powerful that it even enlightens things you didn't know it enlightened. And you know, if a guy says, the Torah, you know, it's against, whatever it is, it's against economic equality, and it's capitalistic, and it's misogynistic, and this and that. So therefore, it was all made up by people, and it's all false. Vechitzonis, he's saying some guy made up the Torah, and it's false. But Pnimius, what he's saying is that, you guys, you don't realize how deep the Torah is. You think the Torah is not so deep, because it doesn't have a better version of socialism than Karl Marx, and it doesn't have a better version of, you know, a better version of, you know, equal rights for everyone than the ACLU. And it doesn't, now again, better doesn't mean better in the same way. It means better in the Torahic way. He's saying, you guys have to beef up your emunah and find more and more light within the Torah that has the answers to all these things. And like when he says, I believe in art. The Torah, it's against art. I hate the Torah. What he means is that, shouldn't you have more faith in your Torah and believe that the Torah will illuminate art and make better art than any secular person can make? Don't you believe the Torah can make a better physical body than any secular person can make? The Torah can make better agriculture, better economy, and better everything that anyone could make? So basically, I mean, it's very radical. We all have or to accept for each other, but that's the extent to which Rav Kook took it. And now you understand who Rav Kook was historically. He wasn't the Rav who said we can cooperate with seculars on some things. Like, that's nice and it works, but it's not going to inspire people for 100 years. The reason why Rav Kook was so inspiring is because, you know, he really had this emunah that everything is really kadosh, and then I'm not just cooperating with the secularists in spite of their secularism. I'm finding the kadosh in their secularism. And that is a very, very inspiring message that, you know, really lasts ad hayom hazeh, inspires a lot of people. Is he right or wrong? That I can't, that's a question too hard for me to answer. But at least you have a little appreciation of where he's coming from.